not seen that.
Hello and welcome back to How the Fuck Have You Not Seen That? The Fan Critical Podcast. Yeah, that's right. Get excited. Where we go into our lying closets of shame and reveal what films we haven't seen but have said we have seen to all of our mates, fellow podcasters, and worst of all, to you, the listeners. Yes, for years we've been lying to ourselves. Today, on this lovely podcast, I'm joined by the lovely ladies of Fan Critical. I have Emma.
Hello.
And Lucy.
Hello.
Hello. How are you both? How is your new COVID-filled world going on?
I mean, yeah, I've just had a baby, so I wouldn't have been going out raving anyway. So it doesn't feel that weird to me. And I'm enjoying the sunshine. Yeah, it's very sunny here in the UK. So lovely. Happy and healthy, which is all you can really hope for over here.
Lovely. Emma, how are you getting on?
My life is full of boxes. There's about 50 of them sitting in my living room waiting to be packed because I'm moving house in 3 weeks.
Ooh. Pack them up. Oh, guess what, Emma? I'm moving house in 3 weeks too. Let's have a little moving house
housewarming
podcast party. Housewarming online.
Yeah.
So that's good. That's good. And a good activity for lockdown, you know. Here in Melbourne, we're back in extreme lockdown. We're back on stage four, which means I was just explaining to the guys, means we've got a curfew of 8 p.m. So not allowed out the house after 8 p.m.
Stop being an eight-year-old.
Yeah, it is mental at the moment. But hey, that means more time for watching films and podcasting, which is exactly what I did this afternoon. And as I said, the premise of this podcast is simple. We've been going through, each of us have been taking it a turn every single week and sort of revealing what films we've been lying about. Just to run through the ones we've done already, we did RoboCop, which was Gareth's. I did Reservoir Dogs. John hadn't seen Spirited Away or any Studio Ghibli animation, so he loved that. Then we have also done Usual Suspects, Aliens, Scarface, and I have to say it, this one for me is the most shocking one of all.
This is
and
the
I
worst.
I can't believe I'm going to ask you this, Emma, but how the fuck have you not seen Gladiator?
It's so shameful, isn't it?
Yeah.
The really abuse is. I got from you lot when I said that was unbelievable.
It's quite
I didn't want it to be my first one.
It's blasphemous, Emma. It is. I can't even. The thought of someone not seeing this film is like when someone says they haven't seen Star Wars to me. And I know that's got a little bit of an out maybe because people go, oh, I don't like Star Wars. But this to me feels like it's something that I said this to John and stuff before. This appeals to everyone, I think. There's not many people this film doesn't appeal to. It covers a lot of sort of bases, you know?
And I think if you like if you enjoy film, which you clearly do, to have not seen
to be in the podcast,
I just don't understand how it's happened, to be honest. Can you elaborate on how you've got through your formative film watching years without seeing this film?
Tell us.
Do you know what? I have no idea. I really don't know how I've gotten away with this. And I wonder if it's like,
until now,
because I know what happens and I know the cast and I kind of, you know, you see so many bits of it that you kind of feel like you know what's going on. It's a bit like that. Bearing in mind, when this came out, I was 11. So, like, you know, bit violent.
You're not 11 now, are you?
You're not 11
now.
No,
I'm not. That was 20 years ago. So
Jesus.
You can all do the maths on my age. But I am a bit. I am very ashamed of myself, and it's one of those. Again, it's like you get to a certain point where you think I've gotten away with it for a decade. Might as well get away with it for another decade. You know, not a massive fan of Russell Crowe. Just one of those things. I am really.
He's bloody good in this film, so don't you have a
he
go
is bloody
Crowe
good. Yeah,
film. He's brilliant. I've just noticed in my notes I've written, "How the fuck have you not seen Gladiator?"
I really miss seeing your misspellings, Len. That's probably the thing I miss most about you living in the UK and us podcasting together. Just when you called Bran Brian on Game of Thrones, you'd written it as Brian. I miss Brian. It. I do miss it.
Yeah. Brian the Broken. No,
that's why I have to tell you guys now, because I type quite furiously when I write the notes.
Gladiator.
There's so many spelling mistakes. Yes, Gladiator. Sounds like one of our worst of Netflix films.
Yeah, it's just a horrible remake.
So, Rotten Tomatoes synopsis of Gladiator says this. Ridley Scott and an excellent cast successfully convey the intensity of Roman gladiatorial combat as well as the political intrigue brewing beneath. And weirdly for me, it only got 77%.
I know. I was raging when really? I looked up. I raged.
And I tell you why, because I went and did a little bit of research, obviously, as we do for podcasts, and I've seen this film loads of times, but I hadn't seen it for like 5 years, and I was like, is this film going to hold up today? I watched it today, put a ragu on for 5 hours, ooh, yeah, let it sit in the slow cooker, yeah? Then nice. I went and watched Gladiator.
That's a Tuesday have or a to Wednesday. Say,
yeah, it's a great Wednesday. You know, this, I did some research, this won Best Picture and Best Actor at the Oscars.
Yeah.
That is mental, I forgot about that completely. You know, so it's obviously a very highly thought of film, and I bloody love it. But let's get to the chase. Let's cut to the chase, as it were.
Get to the chase.
Let's get to the chase. Let's go around the group and let's see what you think of it. Because, and Emma, we'll come to you like last, yeah? Because it's like, yeah, it's your moment to shine, yeah? So me and Lucy will talk about it, and then we'll let
big
you
reveal.
Just scuttle off. Yeah. So, Luce, go on then. Gladiator. All-time classic film.
Yep.
Agree. And then also, give us your blueberry score for this film, please.
So this is one of my favourite films. I think it's one of the first films I saw that wasn't like a Disney film or like a summer blockbuster that's made for kids. Because I was about maybe 13, 14 when it came out, Emma. So yeah, well, I was also young. Didn't see it in the cinema. But I just love it. And I fell in love with it. And I remember for my mock GCSEs, that's exams for those that don't live in England, for doing well, my mum bought me it on VHS. I used to write reviews, aww, like film reviews, just on the family PC. And I wrote a film review of Gladiator. I think I gave it 5 stars, and I'm going to give it 5 blueberries because it is. I
Lucy,
watched it last week. I know, I'm such a loser and I haven't really changed. Just writing reviews for no one, not published, just for myself.
Yeah. Just like this podcast.
Yeah. Well, this is like a step up from that. I watched it a couple of weeks ago again, and yeah, it really stands up. And there's so much that stands out about it that's different from today, and you don't really get films like this anymore. We'll elaborate on that as we go through the podcast. But it's just, it's so moving. It's so well acted. It's so well shot.
Yeah.
The storyline, it could just be a cliche, but it's not somehow. I just think it's a tremendous piece of cinema. It means a lot to me as a film, and it's obviously 5 blueberries from me.
Oh, lovely. And I will say now that the listeners and myself and John and Gareth, if they were here, will forgive you for reviewing it in the star system. Obviously, this way that way predated the blueberry
it
system.
Did.
The blueberry system is a new innovation. I say new; it's at least 10 years old.
Yeah,
maybe.
I mean, when I was 14, writing my own reviews, stars was the accepted way of reviewing things. But they were, you know, different times.
There's no way you could have predicted the review landscape in the future. That's just not possible.
No.
So I'll let you
thank
you off.
Thank you.
All right, yeah, so I set the scene with me already, just watching this, chilling out on the sofa, ragu sitting away, making lovely aromas in the apartment.
I thought you were about to say making love.
Not with the
just
ragu,
love
Jesus.
To the ragu.
No, it is a lovely ragu. This film is incredible. Like, I haven't seen it for like 5 years, and it's one of those films that I sort of purposefully tell myself not to just watch on a whim, because I want to save it and savor the moments when I watch it, right? And we talked about this maybe in one of the last maybe in Usual Suspects or something. I said how it's a good Sunday movie.
Definitely.
And it's a perfect Sunday movie, even though it's a Wednesday and I watched it. But I will say
every
day's
Sunday.
I sat down watching it and I was like, God, it's just so well made and so well acted. And so the story, like you said, it's just a roller coaster of emotion constantly. And it's some of my favorite areas of history is like Roman history. I love it. And I love, like, you know, watching this, you see in elements of Game of Thrones have clearly taken from it, things like Lord of the Rings.
Definitely.
And things, all these other films, battle sequences, techniques that they used. And it's just fantastic. Like, I was tearing up at the end again, and even though I know what's going to happen, and then Elysium comes on, and I just like, oh my God, I'm just like on the cusp here. So for me, it's a Five Blueberry film. It's, you know, there's obviously some tiny little flaws here and there with it, but it's just for enjoyment levels, and just, it's one of those films, it's an experience as well as just a well-crafted piece of cinema. It's just a great experiential film to watch, like just the emotions that it makes you feel, and they're the most powerful films in my opinion. So for me, it's Five Blueberries. And now we come to Emma.
Ooh, who, bit of a build up here, Emma, with us raving about it.
Yeah, this is a rave. And I will say that, you know, one of my concerns, Emma, was, has this film aged well? And I'm interested to hear your take on that as we pass over to you and your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I think it has. It definitely stands the test of time, and it stands up to its reputation. I think it's a stunning film, isn't it? And the cast are amazing. I mentioned earlier that I don't really like Russell Crowe. But he's fantastic in this, and you really root for him. And even though I know how the story goes and what's going to happen, that didn't take away my enjoyment of watching it unfold. And of course, like Joaquin Phoenix, he's so good.
Yeah.
He is just so good. And the two of them play off each other so well. They've got great chemistry. And I think they do an amazing job of that very tense, very, I want to say violent relationship that they have, which, you know, violent in terms of extremes. You know, there are a few bits where you look at it and you think, oh, that's aged a bit. But it was made 20 years ago. So, of course, that's going to happen. And yeah. I think one of the things it reminded me of, one of my favourite films, is the kind of tone and the feeling and the story of Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Yeah, great
which
film.
Sounds a bit
film.
Weird.
Absolutely amazing film.
No, I love it.
Yeah, I mean, one of my favourite films of all time. I think I've got two copies of it on DVD. I don't have a DVD player, which is bizarre. But I think it was like the tone of it and the way it was, the way it's filmed and the way it's set and those kind of set pieces and the kind of main character. I think Russell Crowe felt to me a lot like, I've just had a mind blank, Kevin Costner.
Yeah,
I was like, what? La, la,
la. He does a better English accent, though.
Yeah, let me get onto that later. I've heard worse. I've definitely heard worse. But yeah, you're absolutely right. It's got to be Five Blueberries. It's a stellar film, and I am even more ashamed of myself.
Gladiator.
Yeah, Gladiator was great. So, like, the aliens that came down from the pyramids and then they all did
all
a fight.
Hail Gladiator.
It's a really good film.
Good.
So you could say, Emma, if we were to ask you the question,
are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
You would say, exactly. Yes, I am, actually. Thank you. Is that right?
Yes, yeah, I'm highly entertained. Thank you very much,
Five Blueberries,
Mr. Crow.
Entertained.
Yeah,
I was entertained.
Lovely start to the podcast. I bet everyone's loving that, because if anyone listening to this thinks this isn't a Five Blueberry film, this is not a podcast for you. Anyway, before we go on to the trademarked quiz at the end of the episode to prove whether Emma's seen it or not, and Emma, I've actually got some hard questions in here because I've been thinking these quizzes have been too easy recently.
I'm shitting myself about the quiz, to be honest.
Yeah.
If you start asking me people's names, I'm gonna be like Brian.
Well,
Bob.
There's at least four questions about names, so ooh, you're fucked. but before we get into some highlights and a little history lesson, we're going to have a quick advert break.
Boop, boop, boop.
And now to plug some of our shameful things. Yes, there's lots going on here at Fan Critical. And the most important thing that I would love everyone listening to this to do is to go and search for Lovecraft Country Critical. It is our whole new podcast channel, which will be covering HBO's Lovecraft Country, which starts in 2 weeks. And if you don't know what Lovecraft Country is, go and Google the trailer now, and I can bet that all of our listeners are going to love this show. I mean, we don't know how good it's going to be, but the book's fantastic. The people behind the show, you've got Jordan Peele, Misha Green and JJ Abrams. It's got a great production team. And we're going to be covering that every week with our usual in-depth discussion analysis, separate sort of Cthulhu corner, which is going to run through all of the book differences in each episode, as well as any Lovecraft references or any science fiction references that we notice in the episodes. So stop what you're doing right now. pause this, search Lovecraft Country Critical, and please do subscribe to that. There's a preview podcast on there as well as an introductory podcast. And if you want to leave us a review on there as well, that would be amazing. So that's that bit of advertising done. Just to say as well, we do have a Patreon account where you can subscribe to sponsor us further and get access to bonus content, as well as the ability to commission a podcast, commission our cast episodes, all that sort of jazz. All you have to do is go to www.patreon.com/fancritical, and on there you'll see the different tiers, you'll see the options. Any donations to the podcast would be amazing. They go towards operational costs, equipment, hosting costs, anything to sort of create more content for you guys, to communicate with you guys, to try and build this podcast and make it bigger. So any donations would be fantastic. And we really do appreciate your support. Even if you don't go to Patreon, we appreciate everyone's support. And that's it really for the advertisements. It's time to jump into a bit of history with Gladiator.
Is this not why you are here?
Right, guys, I thought what would be really fun, because this film, it's got kind of a reputation a bit like Braveheart in terms of the way that, you know, it's loosely based on some history, but technically is an absolute joke. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't actually have any historical merit. However, I did some digging because I was interested purely for like personal reasons as well. Like I was like, okay, how much of this story is accurate? Like, or as accurate as we know from legend and from history that's been passed down. Of course, always by the victors. Let's put that there. But it's that there are some similarities, you know. You know, Marcus Aurelius is, you know, he's supposed to be this wise sort of Caesar character. He actually was one of the five sort of wise emperors. Hmm. He was called the philosopher emperor, yeah. And he was one of the great thinkers among all of the emperors there ever were. And he did die on a campaign with his son and daughter visiting.
Ah, so,
interesting.
That bit's kind of accurate. Now, there was also a rumour, like, in history that Commodus, his son, obviously played by Joaquin Phoenix in the film, did kill him, but that's not necessarily true. Commodus was actually sort of serving already as emperor 3 years before Aurelius' death, but Romans did fear Commodus. He was very neurotic, extremely odd, very vindictive. This is according to history, in quote marks.
Yeah, well, odd. He is odd.
He was only 18 at the time of his father's death, and he returned to Rome, pretending to be like triumphant, but all he'd done is negotiate like a peace on the frontier. He wasn't interested in ruling. He had subordinates handle all of the administration work, pretty much. But he did love gladiators. And what doesn't come across in the film is he actually was fascinated with being a gladiator himself. Like, he actually went in and fought in the gladiatorial arena several times. But what people have sort of said is that he was never in real any danger. He was always set up to win,
yeah,
kind of situation. He dressed up as like Hercules. He wore like lion skins. This is all like, you know, what people say about Commodus. He did have a sister, Lucilla, and she did actually try to kill him.
Try to hump her all the time as well? Because probably, that incest shit, man.
Yeah, I know. Apparently she tried to like assassinate him. And unfortunately, the assassin was caught and Lucilla was banished to Capri, where then she was executed a year later.
I was about to say, that's not so then, bad. Yeah, being I wouldn't mind being Capri, banished to Capri. But then she got killed. So.
Execution. Yeah, then she was executed. Yeah, gutted. So you can see there's a lot of elements here in the story. And the famous thing about Commodus is that people say that he was killed by a gladiator, which is where this, you know, the thread of the story is in a way. And what actually kind of happened is that Commodus, well, this is once again in air marks because I don't know how much this is true. You know, the internet can also lie. Who knows? But Commodus like hired a wrestler to like help him train for being in the gladiatorial ring and stuff like that. And what actually happened is his concubine at the time sort of conspired with this wrestler who was, if you want to put, you know, say a gladiator, and he strangled him to death. So not in the ring.
Kind of killed by a gladiator then, ish.
Of sorts, or a gladiator trainer. Yeah, so there's a lot of elements there.
Wow.
So, you know, I actually was actually quite surprised at how many elements sort of sort of ring a little true. Mm. Obviously, you have to take extreme artistic license with this film. And speaking of, you know, points that are relevant to history, what are your guys' highlights of the movie? So these are your favourite scenes, yeah? Okay, Emma, we'll start with you because you've never seen the film before. So I'm interested to see what scene really jumped up at you as the best.
I'm a bit torn. I think I've got two. Is that acceptable?
Yeah, that is acceptable. Okay. I will allow it. I'm not a dictator like Commodus. More of a republic.
Do a thumb up.
The thumb is up. Two thumbs up.
I think the first for me is the first battle scene when they're in Germania. Because it's awesome, isn't it?
People should know when they're conquered.
What are you, Quintus? What am I? At my signal, unleash hell.
Like, he's, you know, it's the first time that you meet Maximus and he's commanding this army so fantastically. And there's, you know, they're catapulting fire and there's huge giant Germans, like the mountain on crack. And it's awesome. It's really well shot. It's really exciting and it's a great opening because it really contrasts with the next sort of set of scenes that we get. I really enjoyed it. And I think that kind of set the tone for me very much.
Mm. And what I'll say about that opening battle scene is when I was watching it today, how impressed I was with it. Just how it's aged, like, in 20 years.
Yeah.
The film, that battle scene, if you saw that in a Game of Thrones episode...
Yeah, it reminded me of Game of Thrones, or, like Battle of the Bastards or something.
100%. Yeah. If you saw that now, you'd be like, that was wicked. Do you know what I mean? I was watching that going, it's technically extremely competent, like at this still 20 years on with the effects. You can see there's a lot of practical effects in there.
It didn't feel 20 years old, did it?
Yeah, they actually filmed it. Like these days, you know, CG gets used in battles way too much, but it felt very visceral. It felt very real. It really sets you in amongst it with Maximus and you get this amazing... you know, scene of him just like sort of Jon Snow in Battle of the Bastards, spoiler warning, just going through the battle and having little, you know, skirmishes, as it were. So I really enjoyed that opening scene. I think that is one of the best starts to a film. We said that Reservoir Dogs has a great start with just the conversation around a table. And this definitely has a great start in terms of just production value and putting you in Maximus's shoes. So I absolutely loved it. We'll come back for your second one, Emma. Yeah, we'll come back for that. We're gonna jump around. We're gonna go a bit loosey goosey. Over to Lucy. Let's talk about your favorite moments.
So the film obviously has just so many good moments, but I'm going to choose Maximus's first bout as a gladiator in North Africa or wherever they are when he works in a team with Juba and then he has the classic line, "Are you not entertained?" I just think, oh, it just gives you tingles.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained? Is this not why you are here?
So good. And it also goes into his sort of conversation with Oliver Reed's character. I'm not going to keep saying people's names because I feel like that's going to come up in the quiz, but I know the names. So Oliver Reed in this film is fantastic. His last film, they had to sort of CGI him in at bits, I believe. And it kind of goes into when he's talking about how Marcus Aurelius set him free. And he says, "I didn't say I knew him. I said he tapped me on the shoulder once." So that kind of combination of scenes, but I just think the way it's filmed, and notably, the set palpable sense of fear that I still get when they're gathered waiting to go out and you can see, like, the guy swinging the mace and just the light through the doors is fucking terrifying. Like, you're going to go out there to meet your certain fate. It's just so well done. And I think there are so many good scenes, but I am going to choose, yeah, that first fight as a gladiator for Maximus.
Solid for choice. Me,
yeah, very good choice. I'm gonna raise you the first time they go to the Colosseum.
Yeah.
Because for me, like, yeah, I'm sure we've all, we're from Europe, we've seen the Colosseum, like most of us have. Yeah. It is an incredible architectural achievement.
It is.
And we take things like football or soccer, you know, crowds for granted, where you go to a stadium and there's 70,000 people watching modern day gladiatorial sport, as it were. And you take.
I don't think you can call football modern day gladiatorial sport, mate.
Well, it's what we call it. You know, it's our form of gladiatorial.
It's not a blood sport,
you know?
Yeah.
No, not a blood sport, but like in terms of just, you know, everyone bloody loves it, and you can see in Rome everyone bloody loves gladiator, you know, gladiatorial stuff. But imagine like a character like Juba, for example, who is just enslaved and then sold to be a gladiator. And they rock up at this Colosseum. They see this building, which these people, and let's not forget, Maximus has never actually been to Rome.
No.
Right? He's not seen this. They rock up and they see that building and they hear that noise and they get thrust into this arena where you've got 50, 60,000 Romans begging for blood. I mean, it's just awe-inspiring, like to consider what that must have been like for gladiators. You know,
and I think they even say, it's
fascinating.
I didn't know men could make things so grand.
Have you ever seen anything like that before? I didn't know men could build such things.
Like, it must be amazing.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You don't think like that. Like, it's like the pyramids, all these great structures, these amazing wonders that man has built through thousands of years of history. And you just sit there, how have they done that back then? If you built that Colosseum now, you'd be like, that is incredible. Like, and the fact they did it back then without the tools and the skills we have. Anyway, so they go into the Colosseum, they have this amazing battle, and then at the end of it, you get one of the most famous quotes in.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Movie history, which we're not going to talk about because it might be in the quiz.
How dare you show your back to me? Slave! You will remove your helmet and tell me your name.
My name is Maximus Decimus Meridius, commander of the armies of the North, general of the Felix Legions, loyal servant to the true emperor, Marcus Aurelius. Father to a murdered son, husband to a murdered wife, and I will have my vengeance in this life or the next.
It might not be Emma, so don't start Googling anything if you want a little, you know, don't Google, because it might be throwing you off the scent there.
We can see you if you Google.
But that whole, yeah, 100%.
Yeah, you can.
So that whole sequence for me is, and that battle with the chariots is incredible. Like, it's like Ben-Hur on steroids.
Yeah, it is great.
And
it's amazing.
The production value, once again, the practical effects, the actual use of horses, the flipping of these chariots, and it's just so visceral once again. And I love the way they all work together.
Yeah,
and
so
they
it's not just like, wow, effects. It actually furthers the plot, because you see that they come to respect Maximus for his prowess as a general.
As a leader.
And so that obviously, when we get further on into the film, that really comes into play. So yeah, nothing is just for effect in the film. Everything is building towards the climax. It's just fantastic.
Mm.
It has a bloody purpose, doesn't
bloody
it?
Bloody oath. Bloody oath. So Emma, back to you. Any you had two, give us your second, unless we've already said it. Think of an extra one if we have.
No, you haven't. So it's the fight in the Colosseum with the tigers.
Oh,
And it's just so cool. And it's so, because I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know what was happening. And when that first tiger like leaps out of the ground, it was so exciting and it was just so cool. And he was amazing. I just thought, even the guy that he was fighting, who looked fucking terrifying in the first place.
Yeah, it's cool.
Good, some good like, helmets that weird, in this film.
That weird, very creepy helmet mask. Mm. Ugh.
I love it. Like, it reminds me horrible. Of, once again, and I know we're talking about Game of Thrones, but just talking about how things have clearly taken elements of this film. And I know George R. R. Martin, the obviously, and the Viper. Wrote Game of Thrones. He takes... Well, not even that. And I was going to say the fighting pits of Marine.
Yeah.
But like, you know, obviously George R. R. Martin takes, he loves like the War of the Roses, and he takes from history, like Hadrian's Wall is actually like the wall. Stuff like the fighting pits is about gladiatorial sport. And, you know, just watching these modern day iterations of these things is fascinating to me, and seeing films like Gladiator now and just appreciating how many ideas they took from these things as well. So that's great. That is a good scene with the tigers, Em. Very good scene. Once again, real looks like real tigers to me.
I think it,
you know,
I
they,
yeah, 100% they were real.
They're obviously filmed separately, I understand, but I just mean that production wise, you know,
probably
if you watch,
hired
if you went
from
to,
Joe Exotic.
Yeah, 100%. I reckon if you go to watch a film like this today, filmed, they will so definitely use a CGI tiger.
Yeah, and
I'm telling
shit.
You now, like. And it'll look shit. And we'll watch it in like 20 years' time and go, oh, that's really not aged well. Because there's that laziness these days with just going, oh, yeah, we'll just CGI it. It's cheaper. It's easier. Production-wise, it's like, yeah, just mocap it, green screen it.
And also a bit of safety, you know. They are wild animals, but, probably not.
Yeah, 100%.
You know.
Yeah, but they're trained, 100%, these
100%. Ones. Yeah, they're trained.
How much can you train a tiger? Have you not watched Tiger King?
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
Just on the point of CGI... I'm wondering what you all thought about, because a lot of the sort of scenery of Rome is CGI'd, and I actually thought it was it has aged really well, because it never looked completely real. It was always in that quite bleached, almost silvery tones.
Effect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like, oh my God, look at that. That looks like a video game. It never looked fully like 100% real. It always looked a little bit almost like a dreamscape. So I think the fact that they did that to begin with, now it still looks good. It just looks interesting. What did you guys think?
I thought it looked great. I actually thought, once again, like said to Emma at the start, did it hold up, this film? And those things held up for me. Like, you can tell like the Colosseum was CGI, and you can tell, but it didn't look bad.
No, it didn't.
It looked actually pretty good. Yeah. It looked like they might have done what like Lord of the Rings later did and stuff like that, which is partially build a set. And then just CGI on top of it and replicate.
So they're fighting in a real pit, but not obviously the Colosseum.
Correct. It's just built on with CGI. And that looked really good. Like, I'd be happy seeing that in the cinema today. I wouldn't come out of it going, oh, the effects were a bit ropey.
No.
Never would I do that.
Sometimes I think you can overdo CGI and actually it just becomes too fake, whereas this has like a gritty realism. Where, you know, none of it feels overdone.
It's done to like enhance it, rather than, as you say, it's not a CGI film, like based film. It's all about the characters and physical action, which, as Len said, they do so well, the action scenes.
I'll throw another scene in there just so that you guys, you know, and it's the scene that makes me tear up at the end, which is the scene where he's essentially killed Commodus and he's opens the door to Elysium and his farm, and he sees his wife and his kid, who obviously you don't get to see that much in the film, but Jesus, man, that stuff earlier on with them is horrible. Like, horrible.
Fucking vicious, isn't it?
The music here, this that Elysium track, like I when me and Gaz have been on road trips and stuff, and we have like, you know, driving through New Zealand and stuff, we play that sort of music, man, because it's just
you
so good.
Nerds.
Yeah, whole Lord of the Rings soundtrack, Gladiator
like
soundtrack.
I want to go on this road trip. This is my kind of road trip. I actually went to a wedding where Now We Are Free, like the end theme was played, and I was just like bawling as they came down the aisle. I was like, for fuck's sake, this is, I'm gone.
Yeah.
But yeah, that moment is, it's one of the only films I think I've ever seen where you actually don't mind if the like hero dies, because you like, he wants to die.
Right. Yeah.
Like, as soon as that happens to his, he wants vengeance. He has no interest in becoming emperor or ruling Rome as part of the Senate. It's like, no. And because he knows there's an afterlife where he will again see them. He will see them again. So you're like, I'm glad that he's dead in a way, because now he gets to be reunited with his loved ones. So it's very powerful, that end scene. Yeah, it gets me every single time.
I love it when they go, they sort of all say, like, who will help me carry him? And then they all go over and carry him. I'm just like, yes.
The little boy does. And then Commodus is just lying there and no one gives a
Lucius.
Shit. Yeah, Lucius.
I mean, I'm dead inside, so I didn't cry, but I understand the image.
I bawl every time. I don't care. It just gets
and
you.
That's a great way to segue into, unless anyone's got any other scenes they want to mention at all.
It's all good, to be honest. We could just discuss every scene, so don't worry about it.
Highlights, whole film is a highlight. Yeah. So it's a good way to segue into standout performances. Now, as I've alluded to earlier, Russell Crowe did win Best Actor for his performance as Maximus. We've talked about Joaquin Phoenix a little bit, but those two are just awesome in this film. Mm-hmm. Like, like Maximus is just a guy you don't know him, but you would follow him to your death. Like, you would follow him into battle. Like, he's like cracking a joke in the battle at the start. He's like, you know, you're already dead if you're having a laugh, so don't worry about it.
He's honest and he's humble, isn't he?
Yeah, integrity.
Yeah, and he's just a farmer. You know, he's just a farmer who ends up being this amazing.
I love it when
general.
He talks about his home. Oh, that gets me as well. And he's talking about he's like, it's a humble home. And he describes it and it sounds like a fucking palace. But yeah, he's just a Spanish farmer.
It's a lovely home.
Yeah, I'd live there.
It's a bloody lovely home. I was looking at it going, Jesus, I'd just happily live there. Amazing. The scene, 100%. I think the thing about Russell Crowe's performance in this is, he actually does go through the ringer. Like, he's great in the action sequences, obviously. But you then have like the moment where he sees his wife and his son like just hanging there after they've been brutalized, and just there's just like saliva and tears and everything, and he's like kissing their feet as they're hanging there. I was like, Jesus.
I feel like,
man,
if this was made now though, it would be so much more gratuitous, because that is enough to like break you, what you do see. But I think now they would make it a lot more explicit, which I'm very glad they didn't, because it gets you in the gut just from his performance and what you do see.
Leaving more to the imagination sometimes, definitely, as we've talked about with a lot of horror and stuff, it is more powerful than showing something gratuitous for the sake of it. And just him, that close-up of him kissing like his wife and son's feet or whatever, where they're hanging there, I was like, Jesus, this is it's chilling, isn't it? It's a man who literally a day ago was the most successful like general in recent Roman history. Everyone lords over him, to now being in exile, almost dead, his whole family estate destroyed, and you're just like, Jesus, like, it's just it's a roller coaster. Emma, you liked Joaquin Phoenix, though. He's more your sort of bag, I think, because obviously you're obsessed with like sort of odd serial killer types. And he definitely fits that profile in this film.
You will love me as I loved you. You will provide me with an heir of pure blood, so that Commodus and his progeny will rule for 1,000 years.
He's 100% a sociopath, and he's brilliant at it. He just plays it so well, and he's terrifying, like absolutely terrifying. I felt on edge with him the moment he came on screen, and one of the things that I thought was really interesting actually was his acting with, is it Connie Nielsen that plays his sister?
Mm.
I thought they were brilliant together. And her reactions to his weird behaviour, I think really highlighted how well he plays creepy.
But I
and
also,
it's psychologically creepy.
I also think what is so good about his performance is I actually, up until a point, had sympathy for him. When he's talking to Richard Harris, who plays Marcus Aurelius, RIP, and he's saying, you know, I was never, like, you never wanted me as a son. You've always told me, like, the virtues that you value, and I knew I had none of them. Up until that point, I really actually have some sympathy for him. So I don't think he's just, like, a one-dimensional, like, swivel-eyed loon.
No, he's complex.
I mean, once he kills his dad, then the sympathy's gone. And yeah, he says,
yeah,
like,
about 2 seconds later, you're like,
I would search the faces of the gods for ways to make you love me. Like, he's always felt inferior. And his dad even admits, like, your failings as a son and my faults as a father. I do know, like, all the words to this film, all the dialogue.
Yeah,
good. I gathered, yeah.
I don't need to insert any quotes.
No,
here.
I'll do it for you. I could do all the impressions. But that's what makes him such a terrifying villain, because he's not one-dimensional. And yeah, Connie Nielsen's performance also, that kind of, she has to be contained all the time. She has to be keep her true emotions, for fear of not just for herself but for her son, of what could happen if she lets her real how she feels slip. So that's another great performance.
Joaquin's performance made me think a lot of Joffrey.
Yeah, exactly. Game of Thrones, actually, is that petulant Sansa Stark character as well, with the, you know, the sort of the female role. It's this idea of living in fear of these tyrants who are in charge, you know, who you don't know what they're going to do. That's the most dangerous sort of leader, where you're unsure of if they're going to take any sort of wise decision, or they're just going to react out of emotion. And that's what Maximus is so good at, in contrast, is he distances himself in battle from himself in a way. And obviously he's very hell-bent on vengeance, but he still thinks with that clarity.
Yeah.
And he still tries to make judged decisions, whereas Commodus clearly is a man who is so needy and needy of this attention, and needs to be loved, and lets that emotion rule the way that he himself rules. So
and it
I
leads
that was
to
very
his
interesting.
It leads to his downfall, because if he was any kind of Caesar, he's been defied by a gladiator. Yet the gladiator gets killed, but he so wants to be loved, and he sees that how the crowd love Maximus that he lets him live. When really, if you were any kind of man, you'd have him put to death. And because the crowd would forget in a week, because a new gladiator would come along. But he's just so, like you said, Len, so needy of that love, because he never got it from his father. Psychoanalysis, that he lets this man live that's openly defied him, makes himself look weak, and then he ends up dying at his hand. So you've got it all
unhinged
wrong, Commodus.
And unpredictable.
So I think we've covered all the bases there. We've given our detailed thoughts on Gladiator, and it's safe to say we all bloody love it, and I'm sure you all bloody love it, and I'm sure everyone at home has extensive knowledge on this film. So do feel free to take part in what is becoming a very, very fun and well-loved tradition. That is the How the Fuck Have You Not Seen That quiz that happens at the end of each episode. The way this works, if anyone hasn't listened to these before, is we need proof or evidence that the person who has said they haven't seen it has actually seen it. So we orchestrate a quiz. It has 6 questions. They have to get 3 questions right to get the seal of approval. If they do not get the necessary three, which has never happened, no pressure, Emma, then they have to go and rewatch the film. Okay, so there's going to be 6 questions, Emma. You ready? Get off Google. I'm watching you.
Can I answer if she doesn't know? Just being
correct.
A geek.
Lucy can be a geek. You may, yes. I'm going to put some lovely quiz.
I'm shitting myself about this.
Gladiator music on, maybe some sort of Elysium remix now.
I mean, don't forget, I've watched Gladiator, not Gladiator.
Yes.
It's better be a Gladiator quiz.
Just to confirm to the listeners, these questions are on Gladiator, not Gladiator. But yes, okay, let's start with an easy one, Emma. I'll give you an easy one to get you off the bat. Where are the Romans campaigning at the start of the film?
Germania.
Are you not entertained?
Yes, I would have also accepted Germany. You know, this one, Emma, is one that's very important. And if you get it wrong, you're a joke. Question number two. What is Maximus's full name?
Maximus Decimus Meridius.
Are you not entertained?
Yes.
Correct. Correct.
I
literally had in my head, she's definitely going to get that wrong for some reason. So you've got two.
I memorized it before the podcast because I knew that you were going
to
ask me.
Yeah, I mean, that has to be in there. Right, we're going to ratchet up the difficulty a little bit now. Okay, so get ready. Question number three. What battle do Maximus and his crew have to reconstruct when they first enter the Colosseum in Rome?
Is it Carthage?
Are you not entertained?
Yeah, I'll give you that one. It's the Battle of Carthage. Woo! Against Hannibal the Barbarian. So, I'm not going to lie, listeners. Jeopardy is gone from this quiz now. She's achieved the three necessary. Yes, I should have asked harder ones at the start, but with Emma, you never know. So I thought, you know, I had to give her a few.
So, yeah, I mean, like, anyway. Is it a leopard print voxel in Scarface?
Yeah, exactly. Let's crack on. You know, play along for fun still. Still good fun. Lucy, you know, you're still in. Get ready, fingers on buzzers.
Oh, I'm ready now.
Okay. Question number four. What are the names of Maximus's horses?
Oh, for fuck's sake. That's rough, isn't it?
Well, I should have asked this as question three to keep the suspense going. Did a rejig because I thought it was too hard. This is a hard one.
This is really hard. Geronimo and...
Nah, not far off.
Brian.
Where you are far. You are Sherbar. Far off. Any idea? It's not Shadowfax, Lucy, or anything like that.
It's something like... Not Euripides. Agades. No. I don't know. No.
It's Argento and Scarto. That's the name of his horses.
Argento's a nice name.
Stupid horse name.
He has them on his armour. You see? Yeah. Remember? Okay, so still only three correct. Not even superfan Lucy knew that one, so should have opened with that. Question number five. Which senator helps Maximus conspire against Commodus?
Is it Gaius?
Now we can't see if she's Googling.
Gaius is incorrect, so throwing it over to Lucy.
It's Gracchus, played by Derek Jacobi. Yes. Give me 2 points please.
A lot of G-usses, you know.
Mm. So I've got the first letter right, at least.
Yeah, yeah. So really, I've structured this quiz poorly because this could have been...
Yeah, you have.
This could
that's
have been
on
it.
You.
This, yeah, yeah, that's my... I'll learn from this. Okay, question number six. What does Maximus's squire Cicero give to him?
Oh, his little totems of the lady and the boy, of his wife and his son and the gods.
Are you not entertained?
Yeah, very muddled answer, but I will accept that. just because it was a lovely use of the word totem, which I haven't heard since Inception podcast, so I like that. So Emma, you have successfully passed. Correct.
I'm so relieved.
Well done.
I genuinely thought I was going to fuck that.
Four out of six. Yeah.
In some ways, but
I could have asked harder questions. You know, I had some really difficult ones on there earlier and I was like, nah, I'm not going to do that. So I just didn't want you to be the first one to lose, Em. Remember that when you're doing a quiz for me
really
in the future.
I will.
And that's it for the Gladiator podcast. You know, it has been a, like I said before, a roller coaster of emotions, mainly positive. In fact, all
it's
positive.
It's been a chariot ride.
It has been a charity ride, indeed. So that's it. Thank you for listening, everybody. Thank you, Lucy, and thank you, Emma, for your in-depth opinions and takes on what is Ridley Scott's classic 2000 film, Gladiator.
Thanks for hosting, Len.
Yep.
No worries. This is an enjoyable one to host because, you know, some of the garbage that we've had to host in the past. None of these. I'm just, you know, some things, you know, in the past, difficult to write about. This one, fun to write about.
Yeah.
So a couple of things just to plug you one more time. And I will reveal what we're going to be covering next in the next How the fuck have you not seen that episode? That'll be in 2 minutes, but I just implore everybody to search for Lovecraft Country Critical and subscribe to that podcast, because that is going to be an amazing show that starts in 2 weeks. It's our next big project here at Fan Critical, and I'm certain it's going to be a great hit. So Lovecraft Country Critical. I'm going to throw it over to Lucy here, and this is going to be a surprise for everybody, myself included. Usually we discuss these things outside of the podcast because we need to, what's the word? We need to vet them. We need to go through them. We need to go, is this going to be a good podcast? I'm putting a lot of faith into Lucy here because she's dropping this bombshell live. I'm hearing this information as the listeners hear it. Yeah. So big moment. Lucy, you're next up on the, how the fuck have you not seen that bandwagon? What have you been lying about, mate? Come on.
So this is a film that, when we've been going through the top 100 films to find films we haven't seen, I actually just skipped past it because it's so ingrained to me to lie about having seen it. I haven't seen Pulp Fiction.
Sorry?
What?
I haven't actually seen it.
Sorry, I'm sort of zoned out a little bit there.
What the fuck?
Are you fucking
I blame The Simpsons. I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it. I don't know.
I'm furious, Lucy.
What do you mean you blame The Simpsons?
Because I've seen so many... I feel like I know so much about the film because of The Simpsons and just general pop culture, but I haven't actually seen it. Mad, isn't it?
I upset.
You know, I had this conversation. I had this conversation with my mum, funnily enough, when I was home last weekend, about our favourite Tarantino films, and this is my favourite.
Oh,
and it's also in my top 10 films of all time. Ooh. And I cannot wait for that podcast, woman.
I know. I just haven't. I love like Reservoir Dogs, but
this
I just haven't seen it.
I'm just going to get into my Pulp Fiction quotes out. I'm very excited to do that podcast. Yeah, well, that you know, this is why I trusted you. And you didn't let everyone down, did you? Because I didn't know that.
I never do.
You know,
that's because Gaz, I lied. Like, we would have done that before Aliens, surely. But it's so ingrained to me just to be like, yeah, I've seen it. Yeah.
No, it's nice to do Aliens because we did Reservoir Dogs, which is obviously very similar to Pulp Fiction in a way.
True.
So it's nice to break it up with a bit of sci-fi fantasy action, you know? So
I'm so excited.
Excited. Well, that's next.
That is next. And that will be live in maybe 2 to 3 weeks' time. Sort of in the midst of our Lovecraft Country coverage, as it were. So I want to say thanks to you guys again. Thanks for being here. Thanks for listening, listeners. As I said, check out the new podcast. Get ready for that new How the Fuck Have You Not Seen That. Also to say we have some commission podcasts coming out soon, so stay tuned for that. We've got No Country for Old Men, which will be next up on our agenda. So some good stuff going on here at Fan Critical, considering the COVID pandemic and basically being locked in our houses. But yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for listening. Thanks, Em. Thanks, Luce.
I will see you
thanks,
again.
Thanks, Len.
But not yet.
And that's very good. I hope you were all entertained. Goodbye.
Hey, bye.
Bye.